on Monday is a holiday in the United States. It's known as Columbus Day. Some banks are closed. Some state motor vehicle offices are closed. There's no U.S. mail delivery, although UPS and Federal Express will be open. There's some public transportation, such as buses and trains, may run on a holiday schedule. And if we look back with regard to Columbus Day, we see what motivated Columbus and other Europeans to come to the Americas. Well, we have to realize that the world in the 1400s AD was very different than what it is now. North Africa, the Middle East, most of Spain and Portugal, Turkey, much of the Mediterranean Sea were occupied for 700 years by the expanding Muslim Empire. 1.5 million white Eastern European women were captured, enslaved, and sold on auction blocks and transported to North Africa and the Middle East by the Muslim Empire. Most of us may have heard of Marco Polo. Marco Polo was a Venetian merchant from Italy. He was an explorer and a writer who traveled to Asia and through Asia, going along the Silk Road. This was about 200 years before Columbus, in the late 1200s. And his travels are recorded in a book called The Travels of Marco Polo, which he published around 1300 AD. This was over 700 years from now ago. And during the Middle Ages, the school children today still learn about the travels of Marco Polo. It's a book that described to Europeans the mysterious culture and the inner workings and the great size and wealth of the Mongolian Empire and China, giving their first look into China and Persia, which we know as Iran, India, Japan, and other Asian countries and cities. Marco Polo learned the mercantile or trading from his father and his uncle, who had previously traveled through Asia, and they had met the emperor, which you may recognize the name, Kublai Khan, the conqueror. Then in 1269, the father and uncle returned to Venice, Italy, to meet the father's son for the first time. Now, that had to be odd when he comes back, having been gone for years, and meets his son. And then picks up his son, and then they go on at what we call the epic journey to Asia. And they explored many places along the Silk Road until they reached Cathay, which we now call China. They were received by the royal court in China by Kublai Khan. And because he was so intelligent and apparently humble, he was appointed to serve as Kublai Khan's an emissary to foreign countries. He was sent on missions throughout the empire in Southeast Asia to Burma, India, Indonesia, Sri Lanka, and Vietnam. He also traveled extensively inside of China, living in the emperor's lands for 17 years, seeing many things that the Europeans didn't know anything about previously. The Polos, father, son, and uncle, also accompanied a Mongolian princess back to Persia, which they delivered to her around 1293, and then back to Europe after 24 years of being gone. And they opened up people's minds here in the Dark Ages to the world beyond. You know, over time, the Silk Roads from China, the trade from China and India to Europe, were closed, however. High tariffs were extracted from the merchants by the Muslims that plugged up the Middle East. And the European merchants decided there had to be a better way to get the goods and items that they wanted with China and India and the Spice Islands of the East Indies. Well, in the mid to late 1400s, Portugal and the Spanish kingdoms threw off the Muslim overlords. The Muslims retreated to North Africa and the Middle East. The Spanish kingdoms were combined one after another into what is now modern-day Spain. The new Spanish kingdom was ruled by King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella. And Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand authorized and funded the Spanish exploration of the Western Hemisphere. They funded Columbus, who then came to the Americas. But Columbus wasn't Spanish. He was an Italian sea captain. And he was an accomplished because he had sailed to England and Iceland before attempting to cross the Atlantic. And because he was an Italian sea captain And because Marco Polo was such a renowned explorer, he had to know the story of Marco Polo, who was 200 years before Columbus. So Columbus set sail across the Atlantic, and he came to the New World, the Americas. And he found a world full of treasure. In Matthew 13:44, Jesus Christ explained about the kingdom of God in Matthew 13:44. The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and hid, and for joy over it he goes and sells all that he has and buys the field. Verse 45, and again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking beautiful pearls, who when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. So Jesus Christ is describing the kingdom of God as a valuable treasure that can be found and then treasured because somebody realized what they had, or somebody can go and seek it. You can find it by accident, or you can seek it. Well, Columbus was seeking the treasure that he could explore and to find, and he found by accident something else. And on came the Spanish conquistadors, the explorers, and what were they interested in? Gold and glory, of course. We've long wanted to be rich. When you were a little kid, didn't you want to have more money than your parents would allow you to buy the snow cone or whatever it was at the local carnival? Whatever it was, it was just too much. But everybody always wants a little bit more. And of course, after 700 years of domination by the Muslims, the Spanish had thrown off the Muslims. They were reorganizing in their classes, and they had a nobility class. Well, how do you get to be a nobleman? Well, if you're just a peasant and you want to be a nobleman, you can become a nobleman. The king and queen will make you a nobleman if you receive glory in battle. So that means you have to go conquer something. So the Spanish conquistadors went off to the New World. They wanted gold, and they heard it was there because they saw it on the natives, and they wanted glory. And if they had the gold, they had the riches, they could then be knighted by the king and the queen. And now, of course, ultimately we'll read that the Spanish conquistadors found what they were looking for. 2,500 years before Columbus, there was a wealthy king of Israel. And in ancient Israel, the temple built during the reign of King Solomon contained enormous treasure. It had a wondrous collection of gold and silver artifacts. There were ornate dishes, tableware, candlesticks. Many things were covered with gold. We can turn to 1 Kings 6 and 1 Kings 6. And until you actually read some of the details of how much gold there was, and this is long before the conquistadors, long before Marco Polo, in 1 Kings 6, starting in verse 19, we're talking about the temple that was built under Solomon. And he prepared the inner sanctuary inside the temple to set the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord there. Now, the Ark of the Covenant is really contained the Ten Commandments and a few other items. We look to Hebrews 9 and verse 4. This Ark of the Covenant is described. It had the golden censer and the Ark of the Covenant overlaid on all sides, in Hebrews 9, 4, overlaid on all sides with gold, in which were the golden pot that had the manna, Aaron's rod that budded, and the tables of the covenant. So we have gold layered over this Ark of the Covenant, the gold container, the pot that had the manna, gold censer. So this is being prepared. We're going back here to 1 Kings 6 and verse 20. The inner sanctuary was 20 cubits long, 20 cubits wide, 20 cubits high. Now, a cubit is what? About a foot and a half from the tip of the elbow to the end of the finger tip. He overlaid it with pure gold and overlaid the altar of cedar. So you have all of this with gold overlay. Now, I've seen gold overlay. In the state capital of Minnesota, they have a chariot with horses above the portico, above the entry. It's, if you look at it, it's just like the national capital, but they have these horses and a chariot. For whatever reason, they're up there. They are covered in gold leaf. It is a remarkable sight. So here we're looking at something that was covered with gold. Verse 21, so Solomon overlaid the inside of the temple with pure gold. He stretched gold chains across the front of the inner sanctuary and overlaid it with gold. The whole temple he overlaid with gold until he had finished all the temple. He also overlaid with gold the entire altar that was by the inner sanctuary. Sounds like a lot of gold, doesn't it? Sounds like it's a pretty valuable enterprise. And we read on verses 23 through 27. It goes and it describes then the cherubs and their size and where they were placed. In verse 28, he also overlaid the cherubim with gold. So all of the figurines that were there. Then in verse 29, it talks about a variety of the walls and the figures. In verse 30, and the floor of the temple he overlaid with gold, both inner and outer sanctuaries. Now, as a, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, I put a parquet floor in my kitchen and dining room, and I thought that was expensive. And here we're reading, they overlaid the whole temple with a gold floor, inner and outer sanctuary. So we have the idea that not only was this, now, of course, the gold had to come from somewhere and be collected. Verse 31, for the entrance of the inner sanctuary made of the doors of olive wood, and goes on to describe them. But what do we read in the last part of verse 32 about the doors and the figures and the flowers? He spread gold on the cherubim and on the palm trees. There's a lot of that's layered over with gold. Verse 35. Then he carved cherubim, palm trees, and opened flowers on them and overlaid them with gold, and he applied evenly on the carved work. So they created the items and then put the gold leaf over it. But you know, even before Solomon's temple, if we look about 800 years before that, and as we go back in time, before the temple was built by Solomon, the family of his ancestor, the patriarch Jacob, had gone to Egypt during a famine. And Jacob's family had grown into the nation of Israel. And over the next 400 years, the Israelites went from being guests to being servants and then slaves of the Egyptians. When the Israelites left Egypt under the leadership of Moses following the 10 plagues, the Israelites, as we read, spoiled the Egyptians. We look in Exodus 12, verses 35 to 37. In Exodus 12, verses 35 to 37. Now the children of Israel had done according to the word of Moses, and they had asked from the Egyptians articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing. Verse 36, and the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so they granted them what they requested. Thus they plundered the Egyptians. In other words, they got much from them. Basically, this means the Egyptians were so happy to see the Israelites leave after 10 plagues, I think they were pretty exasperated, that they gave them gold and silver to encourage them to go. This gold and silver then was payment for the Israelites for 400 years of service to the Egyptians. And it was in the form of jewelry and utensils. The Israelites had so much gold at that time that it was readily available to craft a golden calf, as we read in Exodus 32. While Moses was on the mountaintop receiving the Ten Commandments, people by the thousands brought their gold jewelry and gave it to Aaron to melt down and refashion into an idol. And I'm suspecting it was not a little desktop idol. When you have thousands of people, and it said they spoiled the Egyptians, an enormous amount of African gold that they had brought with them. In Exodus 32 and verse 1, now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said, come, make us gods that we shall go before us. For as this Moses, the man who brought us out of Egypt, we do not know what's become of him. Verse 2, and Aaron said, break off the gold earrings which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, your daughters, and bring them to me. So all the people broke off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool and made a molded calf. So they melted it all down, came up with that. It's a lot of gold. In 612 BC, this was 400 years after. We talked about before the temple Solomon built. This is 400 years after the temple that Solomon built. They were invaded by the Babylonians. And the Babylonians carried off the Jews as captives. They also carried off the contents of the temple, all of the gold and silver items in the temple. In 2 Kings 24, I presume you're catching the theme of gold here, that this gold has been valuable throughout the millennia. In 2 Kings 24, Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, his mother, his servants, his princes, and his officers went out to the king of Babylon, and the king of Babylon, in the eighth year of his reign, took him prisoner. The Babylonian Empire conquered Judah, verse 13, and he carried out from there all the treasures of the house of the Lord, from the temple, and the treasures of the king's house, and he cut in pieces all the articles of gold which Solomon, king of Israel, had made in the temple of the Lord, as the Lord had said. Like they were desecrating the temple, just took everything that Solomon was instructed to put together, chopped it up, hauled it off to Babylon. Interesting that the temple was burned, and that melted the gold and the silver. The precious molten metals flowed between the cracks in the rocks. In order to get the gold and the silver, the conquerors had to take apart the building and the foundation, the building blocks of the temple, and in order to get the gold and silver out. So they removed that. And the same thing happened again over 600 years later. Christ had even prophesied that the rebuilt temple would be torn down, that the building blocks would again be torn apart, and it happened again when the Romans destroyed the temple in 70 AD. I want to go from 70 AD and jump ahead now, get in your time machine, another 1,422 years up to 1492, back to when Columbus sailed from Europe to America. A lot of people may not know that in 1492, the Jews were expelled from Spain. An edict of expulsion was issued against the Jews by King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella on March 31st of 1492. The Spanish had reconquered the Spanish homeland, combined the kingdoms. They kicked out the Muslims. They were busy throwing everyone out who was not a Roman Catholic. This meant no more Muslims, no more Jews, and no more Christians who were not Roman Catholic. And you say, wait a minute, I didn't know there were Christians who weren't Roman Catholic. Well, let's take a look at Romans 15. In Romans 15, because we know historically true Christians were in Spain because the Apostle Paul visited them. In Romans 15 and verse 24, what did Paul say? Whenever I journey to Spain, I shall come to you, for I hope to see you on my journey and be helpful on my way there by you, if first I may enjoy your company for a while. So Paul had been in Spain a long time before that. We do not have the names of individuals who may have been true Christians through time, but we know they were there for Paul, and we know that the edict to expel everyone who wasn't a Roman Catholic was carried out. They had to be out by July 31st, and by the last day of July, 1492. Interestingly, those who were evicted from Spain were permitted, that meant the Jews, the Christians who were not Roman Catholics, and others, they were permitted to take their property with them, provided it was not gold, silver, or money, which basically you could take what? Your clothes and your furniture, if you could find a way. The ships of Christopher Columbus, that was July 31st, last day. The ships of Christopher Columbus were completely loaded up by the night at the beginning of August 1st. And they sailed shortly thereafter. The ship's captain was a Jew. The ship's captain's doctor, Columbus's doctor, was a Jew. We do not know how many others were there because it was a way to get out of Spain with your head still on your shoulders. As you may know, the Spanish Inquisition was underway to purge Spain of anybody who was not Roman Catholic. And so people wanted to get out. And that's why there's been a very small, if any, Jewish population in Spain since then. It's been very hostile to them. Well, the ships sailed across the Atlantic, and they arrived in the islands of the Caribbean under Columbus. The ship and the crewmen, they immediately sought what? Gold. They were looking for the riches of the world. And the Columbus expedition did everything it could to obtain gold from the natives that they encountered. And they did find some, and that was encouraging. And so many Spanish conquistadors flocked to the New World. They went to Cuba, Mexico, Peru. They explored everywhere around the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean Sea. The soldiers of fortune from Spain came from the newly united Spain to the Americas to obtain the three G's, gold and glory. And the third G was God, because they claimed to do it under the name of God. After all, if the Muslims could rule for 700 years under the name of Allah, why, they could rule under the Roman Catholic and spread Roman Catholicism. We read about the Spanish conquistador Hernan Cortes conquered Mexico about 500 years ago, 1521. Let's see, this is about 500 years ago this year. And Cortes managed to secure much gold. His second cousin, Pizarro, conquered the India Empire of Peru. He captured the Inca Emperor Atahualpa as a hostage. Atahualpa, the emperor, the Inca emperor, thought they were having a face-to-face chat with the newcomers, and because they looked upon the Incan emperor as a god. And so what did Pizarro do? He had 30 guys on horseback, and there were millions in the Inca Empire. He just grabbed the Atahualpa and held him, put a knife to his throat, and said, and the nobles were afraid to rush in and save him. They could have easily demolished the 30 Spanish. But the Spanish figured out that Atahualpa was a god to those people. They were afraid that Pizarro would kill him. So what does Pizarro do? He's got a firm grip on Atahualpa, and he has him take a piece of chalk or limestone, and he marks on the wall of a room and says, "I will let him go when this room is filled with gold." And the Incas brought the gold in order to free their emperor. That's not the outcome, but the ransom was a room full of gold as tall as a man. Over the next two centuries, enormous amounts of gold and silver were mined out of Central and South America and sent back to Spain. Entire fleets of treasure ships were filled with gold and silver bars. So much gold and silver was extracted that it upset the world's money supply. The first fleet of treasure ships had 30 ships in the fleet in 1503. And Columbus himself warned them, who had just arrived on his fourth voyage, and he said, "Don't sail, there's a hurricane coming." Now, Columbus was an accomplished sailor. He knew what he was doing. They didn't listen to him. The Spanish governor in Central America sent the ships back to Spain anyway. 29 of those 30 ships sank in the Caribbean. Only one ship made it back to Spain, loaded with treasure. And even today, there's somewhere at the bottom of the Caribbean are those unfortunate 29 Spanish ships loaded with gold and silver. And of course, we hear the stories abound of the pirates of the Caribbean, mostly English, enemies of the Spanish. They captured treasure and they buried it on islands, intending to come back later and retrieve it. Perhaps you recall the stories of Blackbeard the Pirate. Nowadays, of course, the youngsters think of the English pirate of movie fame, Captain Jack Sparrow. And if we go to Disneyland or Disney World, why, we see Pirates of the Caribbean. And there's an exhibit and a ride. Perhaps some of you have gone on it. I've managed to see it in two countries. I don't know what it's like in France, yet I haven't been to that one. Well, the lure of riches in the New World was great. So the conquistadors kept coming to America to get gold and glory. And remember, the cover story was they were doing it in the name of God. So they had the three G's. But not all of them got rich. We read of Coronado, who was not wealthy, but he married a well-to-do landowner in what was called New Spain. Now we call it Mexico, but they call it Mexico now, but it was New Spain back then. And he married a Jewish landowner's daughter. Now, we know the man was Jewish. They call them conversos. They pretended to be Roman Catholics so they could own land and escape with their lives. In fact, the Inquisition said, look for people in the New World who burn candles on Friday, don't eat pork, and won't work on a Saturday, because those aren't real Roman Catholics. So these conversos were there. Well, Coronado married the daughter of a wealthy Jewish landowner and then spent years of his life looking for treasure throughout the Southwest United States. I was the first Europeans to discover the Grand Canyon, which was had to be a remarkable sight. Those of you that have been there and have seen it, saw the pueblos, single-story houses, those built into the cliff sides. They saw American bison, the American buffalo that covered the plains through Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, and Missouri. They met many different Native American tribes, but they didn't find any gold. They didn't find Cibola, the seven mythical cities of gold. He searched for a couple of years. He had mortgaged everything that he owned or inherited, but he found no gold to pay off the huge loans he had taken out and went bankrupt, lived another dozen years, and died very disappointed at age 44. But the dreams of Coronado live on. Throughout history, people have continued to chase after treasure, far and wide, for the special treasure that will yield them riches beyond all imagination. Well, each empire of the world throughout history has a place where the treasure is kept. And when the conquests are made of neighboring countries, because they would conquer somebody else and take their treasure, it was expected the conquerors then would loot and carry off whatever gold and treasure they could find. Well, the Parthenon was built at the peak of the Greek Empire in Athens, Greece. It was a marvelous building on a steep hill called the Acropolis. And people have wondered, was this just a temple? Because over the years, it was, in latter years, it was an Eastern Orthodox church. It was a Muslim mosque. Before that, it was a temple to Athena, a pagan Greek god. But the reality is, it was built as a treasury, a showpiece for the Greek Empire, steep on a hill which would be hard to attack, hard to find, and was a repository of silver and gold for their conquest. Now, you don't have to go to Athens, Greece, if you want to see the Parthenon. You just have to go to Nashville, Tennessee. They built a full-size replica. So if you really need to get there, it's, 16 hours away or something. You can do that. But gold has always been close to the hearts of men. In 1848, at Sutter's Mill near Sacramento, California, there was a discovery of gold. President Polk mentioned the finding of gold in his presidential State of the Union address in 1849, and people flocked to California for gold. They sailed to Panama, went by foot or mule across the Isthmus of Panama, and then tried to catch a ship to go up the West Coast and sail to California. Some sailed around the south of South America. Some came by wagon and horse and cart across the big prairie of the United States. Chinese came from ships across the Pacific. They had heard about it and they came, which is why we have so many Chinese on the West Coast today. And they operated service industries, laundries, restaurants, and so forth. There were many jobs of people that did well, and they weren't gold miners. Assayers, surveyors, they ran stores, even catalog merchants. But it wasn't just California. You go up to Oregon. They had the gold mines, a town called Gold Hill. There are church members that live there just north of Medford. Quartzville. Gold is often found in quartz. Of course, so is fool's gold, iron pyrite. Nevada had gold mines and silver mines. Perhaps some of you have been up, and even Montana, and been up and seen the, what is it? It's the $10,000. They have a long bar with 10,000 silver dollars in the, it's a, quite a tourist place, somewhere on the way from Idaho to Missoula, Montana. Nevada miners found silver, but it was stuck to another mineral that was very difficult to extract, and they finally figured out it was lead, and they made money off of both the silver and the lead. People didn't want just gold, they wanted diamonds. Of course, famous is the De Beers Company in South Africa, and then Serbia in Southeast Asia has huge diamond mines. And 213 miles from here, about 4-hour drive, you can go to the state Crater of the Diamonds State Park. Just get in your car and drive 213 miles, and you're there, and you can dig around in the mud and hope you find a diamond. All of these people throughout the ages were searching for treasure. But just to be clear, it's not wrong to search for treasure. Christ did not condemn those who sought the treasure. Indeed, Christ used the parables in Matthew 10, verse 44, to make the point that the recognition of treasure is a step towards bringing the reward. And those in the parable who came across the treasure, something of value, made special efforts to secure the treasure as their own. The question then becomes, where is your treasure? What is the most important treasure in your life? We can turn to Matthew 6 and verse 2. We know this relationship between treasure and ourselves when we read what Christ said in Matthew 6, 2. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Coronado sacrificed everything. He went on a 2-year journey, saw great wonders, and he came home feeling defeated and went bankrupt, not realizing the tremendous wealth that he had, but it wasn't gold. Coronado's heart was focused on gold, and he missed out on the most important things in life. Well, the treasure we're seeking for is the kingdom of God. And each year when we attend the Feast of Tabernacles, we get a small glimpse into the future of the kingdom of God on this earth, a time of wealth and plenty, a time of peace and prosperity, a time in which mankind will no longer be subject to the evil rulers of the world. And yet we have a limited understanding of vision of what the kingdom of God will be like. In 1 Corinthians 2:9, we know it's limited, but as it is written, the eye has not seen, nor the ear heard, nor have entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for those who love him. Well, God has put a tremendous opportunity before us. He set a plan for us to envision his goals, that we inherit the kingdom of God.
But our eyesight is less than perfect. As humans, we strive to see the big picture of what God has in store for us. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians 13:12. In 1 Corinthians 13:12, I'm going to read it in the King James Version. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face, meaning in the future. Now I know in part. We know something now. And what does it say? But then I shall know even as also I am known. So we'll understand something now, but in the future our understanding will expand. Let's turn then, we're in 1 Corinthians, let's go to chapter 3, starting in verse 11, in 1 Corinthians 3, and starting in verse 11. Because all of these people were searching for gold. They were searching for treasure throughout history. But in 1 Corinthians 13, starting in verse 11, for no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now, if anyone builds on this foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, or straw, each one's work will become clear. From the day will declare it, because it will be revealed by fire, and the fire will test each one's work of what sort it is. So how long will those things last? They're all physical things. So we have to be careful about where we put our investment. Is it in physical things? In 1 Peter chapter 1, starting in verse 6, and 1 Peter 1, starting in verse 6. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials. Doesn't that say what has happened to us from time to time, grieved by various trials? Verse 7, the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Didn't we just read that we're going to know more later, and as that understanding grows, we will be able to better praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Christ. But meantime, we will be tested by fire, even the gold. Notice it says it perishes. Because when gold becomes extremely hot, what happens? It turns to a liquid, and as we know about the temples, that gold and silver ran down between the stones, and they tried to tear apart the temple, and did tear apart the temple, even to the foundation, in order to get the gold out. Let's go on 1 Peter 6, go on to verse 8. Whom having not seen, you love. None of us have actually seen the physical Jesus Christ, and yet we love him because, let's read on in verse 8, though now you do not see him, yet believing, you rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory. Because even the little bit that we know is so much more valuable than gold or silver or wood, hay, or straw, or precious stones. Let's now go to Revelation 3 and verse 18. In Revelation 3 in verse 18. I counsel you to buy from me gold refined in the fire that you may be rich, and white garments that you may be clothed, that the shame of your nakedness may not be revealed, and anoint your eyes with eye salve that you may see. We find that the Apostle John was revealing that it's important for us to be able to see what he has been shown into the future, the reward and the responsibilities that Jesus Christ expects from us. What does he say? I counsel you to buy from me gold refined in the fire. Are we talking about actual gold? We're talking about the knowledge of the precious knowledge and the understanding of the kingdom of God that is revealed by Jesus Christ. And it says that you may be rich, and white garments. What do white garments symbolize? Conversion, getting rid of sin, the sacrifice of Christ that allows us to clean up our lives. That we may be rich, how rich can we be indeed when we have the gracious gift of Jesus Christ? The treasure that so many people search for is found in the understanding of the truth. Let's read on in verse 18 of Revelation 3. And white garments, that you may be clothed, that the shame of your nakedness may not be revealed. Wearing the white garments is wearing righteousness, that our sin may be covered up, may be forgiven. And what does it close? And anoint your eyes with eye salve that you may see. That we can see the truth, even though it's only now through a glass darkly. We can only see some. We know that God will reveal more to us at that time. Now let's take a look ahead. We're in the book of Revelation. Let's go to chapter 21, starting in verse 1. In Revelation 21, starting in verse 1. It's interesting that we've been talking about gold and precious things throughout this message. There's 20 mentions of gold in the book of Revelation. Revelation 21, starting in verse 1. What does the Apostle John write? Now I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away. There was also no more sea. Then I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he shall dwell with them. And they shall be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. So now we have the coming of the new heavens and the new earth at the end of the age. Now let's jump down. We're in Revelation 21. There's a description of this new heaven and new earth in starting in verse 14. So let's turn to Revelation 21, starting in verse 14. Revelation 21, verse 14, a description of the New Jerusalem. Now the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and on them were the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb, which is Jesus Christ. And he who talked with me had a gold reed to measure the city, its gates, and its walls. Verse 16, the city is laid out as a square, its length is as great as its breadth. And he measured the city with the reed 12,000 furlongs, its length, breadth, and height are equal. Then he measured its wall, 144 cubits, according to the measure of a man, that is, of an angel. The construction of its wall was of jasper, a precious stone, and the city was pure gold, like clear glass. The foundations of the wall of the city were adorned with all kinds of precious stones. The first foundation was jasper, the second sapphire, the third chalcedony, the fourth emerald, the fifth sardonyx, sixth sardius, seventh chrysolite, the eighth beryl, the ninth topaz, the tenth chrysoprase, the 11th hyacinth, and the 12th amethyst. The 12 gates were 12 pearls, and each individual gate was of one pearl, and the street of gold was pure gold, like transparent glass. What are we seeing here? We're seeing a vision of the future, of value, of quality, and you'll notice the amount of pure gold. That's amazingly, it's transparent or translucent. That you get the idea that this is such a precious situation or such a precious vision that he's hard put to describe it in any other way than the most valuable way that they could think of at that time. So now let's go back and let's take another look at Matthew 13:44. And we read what Christ said, as we read in the beginning, again, the kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and hid for joy over it. He goes and sells all that he has and buys the field. Is the treasure worth it? Do we want to make this treasure that God is offering to us a priority? Let's read on in verse 45 of Matthew 13. And again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking beautiful pearls, who when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. Are we seeking that pearl? Are we seeking the wisdom, the knowledge, the understanding, the spiritual value of what we are being offered through the calling that God has afforded to us? Now let's turn to Matthew 19 and verse 21. In Matthew 19 and verse 21. In Matthew 19, 21, we read, Jesus said to him, and this was the rich young ruler, if you want to be perfect, go sell what you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Come follow me. Jesus Christ was showing the difference between earthly goods and that which lasts. The treasure in heaven is more important to follow Jesus Christ than to change your focus and to put them on other things. Now, it's not wrong to have other things, not wrong to want other things. It's not wrong to build up your estate, as we read on those other parables that Christ gave. But he was showing us the comparison. By comparison, there's no, it's very clear. The treasure that is offered of the kingdom of God that Jesus Christ was referring to was much more valuable. Well, how are we going to get to that treasure? How are we going to build that understanding? And that, of course, is that we love our elder brother, Jesus Christ. In John 14, starting in verse 15, we're told very succinctly, although the treasure is a gift to us, there is something that we will do if we love Jesus Christ. In John 14:15, if you love me, keep my commandments. The map that was searched over throughout history of those seeking treasure, many of them missed the map, the way to better love Jesus Christ, to better love their fellow man, to better love themselves, and to seize the most important treasure that they will ever have, more important than gold. Yes, the treasure that came from the Exodus of Egypt, more than the treasure of Solomon's temple and the grandiosity that we read about there, more treasure than the ancient Greeks could store in the Parthenon, more wonders and treasure than Marco Polo, the Italian who went to China on the Silk Road, more treasure than Columbus could imagine, the Italian sea captain who sailed to the Western world, more treasure than the treasure ships hauled by Cortez when he conquered Mexico, or Pizarro when he conquered the Incas of Peru, more treasure than imagined by Coronado as he tried to explore the Southwest United States, more treasure that God is offering than Blackbeard the pirate, the English pirate, could seize from the treasure ships. Ultimately, there is more gold, precious spiritual gold, in the kingdom of God, and we are given a map on how to do that, and that map will help us to increase our vision. If you love me and keep my commandments, says Jesus Christ.